Today on the Dominic Inyart Show, Roe has fallen. The fight against abortion has turned back to the states. There's some surprisingly complicated morality surrounding the Supreme Court. We're talking about that, and with the fall of Roe, does that mean we're done fighting? Can we pack up and go home? Not exactly. All of that and more right here on the Dominic Inyart Show. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country and welcome to the Dominic Inyart Show. I am your host, Dominic Inyart, broadcasting to you from none other than Denver, Colorado, the home of the Stanley Cup champions. I know we are not a sports show. I had to mention that. By the way, Joe Biden tweeted out about the Colorado Avalanche, and only Joe Biden could manage to tweet something congratulating the Avalanche and make me upset by it. He tweeted out, he said, "Congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche for their first Stanley Cup win since 2001. A comeback story for the ages and one that has made your community so rightfully proud." A comeback! You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? The Colorado Avalanche, who have been the favored team to win for 2 years in a row. It was a comeback story for the ages. So only our decrepit dementia president could manage to make me upset about the Avalanche. I suppose he didn't even make me upset with that. It is funny. Congratulations to the Avalanche. I've been an Avs fan for quite a while here. So I've been in a good mood recently. What's put me in an even better mood than even the Colorado Avalanche is Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade has fallen, and on Twitter, by the way, follow me on Twitter, where I have been having a blast rubbing the fall of Roe into the faces of people on the left. It is very enjoyable. Highly recommend it. And I keep telling everyone on the left, you know, don't worry. It's just a clump of words. And it wasn't murdered. No, Roe v. Wade, it wasn't murdered. It was just aborted. Roe v. Wade was just aborted. That's all. And I keep meaning to ask them, you know, when does a law become a law? How can we? When does a law become a law? And, you know, the law, it's not sentient, it's not conscious, and so there's a difference between a law and a person, you know. So, I don't get why they're so mad. You know, one thing that makes me laugh is Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We have her to thank for the fall of Roe. Thank you, Ruth. You know, I appreciate it. If you remember Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she was the leftist loony Supreme Court justice who was a crazy pro-abort, and she, in her lust for power, she was unwilling to step down as a justice. And back when Obama was the president, the left, they looked at Ruth over there and said, "Hey, Ruth, you know, you're really old and you are about to die, so you should step down." And Obama, he could put in a newer, younger pro-choice model, a newer judge. But Ruth, in her lust for power, she did not step down. And then Trump became president. And when Trump became the president, what do you know? She dies. Who could have seen it coming? And Trump has an empty seat to fill instead of Obama, and Trump puts in Amy Coney Barrett, who then voted to overturn Roe. So Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her lust for power. Now, thank you, Ruth. You're burning in hell, and Roe has fallen. Seeing the left implode on itself has been incredible to watch. I saw a tweet. I read this tweet really early in the morning, and I started laughing really loud. I was trying to not wake anyone up, so I have to censor this a tad. And this is, who is this? This is Gina Darling. Never heard that name before, but this is Gina Darling. She tweeted out, she said, "If men were able to get pregnant, this would have never been up for discussion. LOL, bleep this, backward, bleep, bleep." And then immediately after, she responded to her own tweet saying, "Oh, wait. Pardon my wording, not sure the proper wording for this, but I guess people born with male reproductive organs. If that's not correct, please educate me, heart emoji. Sorry if that came off as transphobic. Well, Gina, it did come off as transphobic. Welcome to the club. Welcome to bigotry, Gina. And Gina, you know, it's too late. You're already a bigot if you mess up Newspeak even once. Off to the Ministry of Truth you go. There is no forgiveness here. Only submission. But no, in all seriousness, the left, they have gone insane and they can't even keep up with their own insanity. And that's because it's not possible to keep up with their own insanity. And I will be the first to say, seeing the left implode is a glorious sight. Highly, highly recommend. 10 out of 10. And if you are on the right, I'd like to encourage you, take this all in. Take your time, enjoy this, and you know, you're living through history, not just U.S. history, but you're living through world history. As Americans, what we do, it sets a precedent that the entire world follows very often. And so, you know, we're in this battle, and we're going to be in this battle between good and evil for our entire lives. And so while we're fighting, whenever, you know, we see the left over there having a bit of a hard time, we should, you know, take the moment and enjoy it. And the side that's having fun is typically the side that is winning. And so we might as well have some fun with it. So seeing the left, seeing them screech in horror, you know, take the next little bit here just to soak it up. Feel their pain and enjoy it. You know, the Daily Wire, I always love, they have their leftist tears tumbler. Absolutely hilarious. But now, with that said, I do have, it's got to be me, I do have the uncanny ability to find the dark cloud in every silver lining. And the justices, by the way, I was shocked to see when the draft opinion of Roe being overturned, when that draft was leaked, I was shocked to see it. I never thought in my lifetime that Roe would be overturned. Certainly not with the current justices who said under oath that they would uphold Roe. I was not expecting this. I would even show those videos of those justices saying that they would uphold Roe. I would look at those and I would show them to my friends and say, hey, look, they said that they would uphold Roe. That is so bad. And now I get to eat my own words, and of course, Roe being overturned, it's a big step in a new direction, and I was very surprised to see the draft, and then when it actually happened, it was shocking to me. But now, Roe being overturned here, it's not all sunshine and rainbows, and I've got a lot of people, I'm seeing them, and they're praising the justices on the Supreme Court to the nth degree. More so than I have found appropriate. A lot of people have been acting as if abortion is not now outlawed. You know, abortion is gone for good. And we hear that all the over the place. And, abortion has been abolished. And all you political junkies out there, you most likely already know that's not true. Abortion has not been abolished. Abortion is being sent back to the states for the states to decide. And it's now, abortion is now going to be considered a states' rights issue. You'll hear that term being thrown around. It's a states' rights issue. And that's what a lot of conservatives have been fighting for, right? You know, like, we don't want the federal government to be responsible for this. We want it to be a states' rights issue so we can ban abortion on the state level. We hear stuff like that all the time, and we've heard that long before the fall of Roe. And unfortunately, I hate to be that guy, but somebody's got to say it, so it may as well be me. But that is an immoral position. It is wrong, and it is immoral. It is evil to say the states that they have the right to vote on God's enduring commands. That is, in fact, evil. And I want to make a biblical case for this. To do so, I'm going to lean heavily on an article put out years ago by American Right to Life And by the way, there's so much that's tricky with abortion. You know, very straightforward. It's not tricky. It's pretty black and white, right? Killing babies is wrong. Not killing them is not wrong. So in that sense, it's pretty straightforward. But the way the world, they have muddied the waters a lot with abortion. And so sadly, because of how much they've muddied the waters, they've put us in a position of fighting abortion. And as pro-lifers, often we will be evil in our own fight against abortion. And so, you know, evil people, right? They are cunning for all their stupidity. We do have to be on guard against them, right? Like there's that famous saying, how's it go? It's the most dangerous lie is one that's 99% true. And so we do have to be careful. And American Right to Life has a lot of really good resources for navigating those muddy waters. And today we're looking at this issue of states' rights, and specifically the Bible. What does the Bible have to say about it? And then we're going to look at some practical implications. And I'm going to spoil my own show, even though I think the states' rights mentality is evil. What they meant for evil, we can mean for good. And so let's jump on over to American Right to Life's article. And we'll have this posted on today's show summary on today's show page at kgov.com. You can check that out, kgov.com, if you want to read it for yourself. All right, let's read this. Some God-fearing pro-lifers claim that abortion is a states' rights matter. The claim is that the very principles of justice, i.e. God himself, would have federal governments tolerate a state's decriminalization of murder generally, or decriminalization of murder for any particular group of victims. Whether the victims would be Jews, Christians, or children, the principles remain the same. But the abortion state's rights position is as immoral as Roe v. Wade itself. The federal government has no authority to decriminalize child killing, and neither do the states. In America, as with slavery, so too with abortion, it was the states themselves and not the U.S. Supreme Court that launched our abortion holocaust. The historical revisionism of Ron Paul and others aside, in the 7 years before Roe v. Wade, 19 states were striking down their own laws banning abortion or otherwise explicitly permitting child killing to varying degrees. The state-sanctioned slaughter began in Mississippi in 1966. Prior to 1973, the states permitting abortion for various reasons were Mississippi, Colorado, California, Oregon, North Carolina, Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Florida, Alabama, Arkansas, Delaware, Georgia, Kansas, Maryland, New Mexico, South Carolina, Virginia, and New York, which allowed elective abortion on demand through 6 months. The Bible can help pro-lifers think through all of this. Adhering to the principles of justice presented in Scripture would benefit not only America, but of course, any nation at any time in history. Israel's 12 tribes are sufficiently similar to America's original 13 states to draw some lessons regarding states' rights. For the Bible is not silent on the question of whether subdivisions of a national, federal government have the authority to refrain from prosecuting the murder of the innocent. The Bible approves of local law enforcement, even local prosecution of murder. Deuteronomy 21:1-9. But Scripture indicates that there is no local right to refrain from the prosecution of murder. Negative evidence. No Scripture says the king should tolerate tribes that permit murder. Positive evidence. The book of Judges, chapter 21, teaches that God does not recognize a local right to decide whether or not to prosecute murder. Rather, when one of the 12 tribes of Israel refused to prosecute the murder of a concubine for that lawlessness, the rest of the nation was justly outraged and moved to action. And with God's endorsement, they lawfully used force to punish Benjamin, including, of course, any local authorities and magistrates who, quote, would not listen, unquote. So all the men of Israel were gathered, united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, "What is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now therefore, deliver up the men, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel." But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. So the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel, and the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjamites. All these drew the sword. Judges 20:11-13, 35. God's word makes it clear that there is no right for a state to decriminalize murder, nor to refuse to prosecute murder. As in Benjamin, such a right is tantamount to lawlessness. And such lawlessness, being manifestly destructive of all rights, cannot itself be an instance of any right, state or otherwise. Righteous anger at any federal government does not validate perversion of justice. Those angered at a wicked federal government should exercise self-control to avoid claiming that the evil government can go ahead and look the other way and ignore crimes committed anywhere within its borders against the innocent. It's hard to imagine evangelical Christians being killed in Massachusetts rejecting protection from federal marshals, but it's easier to claim state supremacy when the blood is not one's own. Claiming that any subdivision of government, whether state, district, tribe, or province, should be tolerated even if it decriminalizes the shedding of innocent blood is an example of giving man's law supremacy over God. No true principle of justice, but only unrighteousness, would lead a nation to tolerate murder within its borders. Whether of concubines, Israel, of Jews, Germany, or of children, America. Another lesson from the Bible regards the head of Israel's federal government. Even though Ahab was not the one who ordered the killing of a man named Naboth, the scriptures teach us that Ahab himself was guilty of murder. 1 Kings 21:19. Why? By not prosecuting that murder, he became an accessory after the fact. Notice also that the pro-life emphasis that judges don't make law misses the mark. Hundreds of states and nations have enacted legislation condoning the killing of innocent children. This argument only makes sense when used opportunistically to exploit some incidental public anger against the judiciary. But it is not a fundamental argument against child killing. If judges don't make laws, but legislators do, then legislators will. In reality, though, true law is discovered, not invented, by any governing official. Further, in the slightly askew phrase, make law is ambiguous. If a righteous judge in an evil nation asserts that a human being has the right to convert to Christianity, for example, he is not making law, but recognizing basic human liberty given by God to every man. If a righteous judge in Germany had ruled against the killing of Jews, he would not have been therefore evil for making law, but righteous for upholding the foundation of all human law, God's enduring command, do not murder. Thus, judges don't make law is another attempt in a centuries-long series of seeking process solutions to fundamental moral questions. If you love any governing official, federal or otherwise, you will not lead him to ignore Solomon's warning from almost 3,000 years ago. Deliver those who are drawn toward death and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, "Surely we did not know this," does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds? Proverbs 24:11-12. Quote, "The law condemns and punishes only actions within certain definite and narrow limits. It thereby justifies, in a way, all similar actions that lie outside those limits," unquote. Leo Tolstoy, widely attributed. So there you have that from American Right to Life, which I believe really that article speaks for itself. Not much needs to be added. As I've pointed out on this show before, any group that protects the life of the innocent, they are doing a good thing. And any group that does not protect life, they are doing a bad thing. And so say take, I don't know, Burger King, for example. Burger King, right? They have the moral responsibility to stand and to declare that life is sacred. And the murder of unborn children, that's illegal. That violates God's enduring command. Thou shalt not murder, right? Burger King has they are responsible. They have the obligation to say that. And so if Burger King has that responsibility and they have that obligation, and if Burger King has to do that, how much more responsibility and obligation does the Supreme Court have? And so the Supreme Court, we're talking about states' rights, and obviously abortion is not a states' rights issue. Abortion should be criminalized nationwide. And the Supreme Court, with their overturning of Roe v. Wade, let me pull this up here. The Supreme Court, they want abortion to be a states' rights issue. So let me read this here from the Supreme Court decision. Quote, "It is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. Quote, the permissibility of abortion and the limitations upon it are to be resolved, like most important questions in our democracy, by citizens trying to persuade one another and then voting." Unquote. So God's enduring command, thou shalt not murder. You know, why don't you argue about it and you guys figure it out. And so they're kicking abortion back to the states. And rather than saying, you know, we follow and obey God and declare that abortion is immoral and that abortion is murder, and according to God's enduring command, it is illegal. Rather than saying that with boldness, they say, you know, other people, yeah, they can decide. Other people will decide. Burger King has the responsibility to do more than that. Yet pro-lifers praise these justices for saying, oh, maybe someone else should decide. No, that's apathy. By the way, earlier in this show, I was joking about thanking Ruth Bader Ginsburg for helping us to overturn Roe. I do have to admit, right, that was tongue-in-cheek. Because she was not too big a fan of Roe v. Wade. She was one of the biggest pro-choice advocates in the world, and she was not a fan of Roe v. Wade. Reading from Princeton now, on Roe v. Wade, which was decided in 1973, Ginsburg reiterated her previous criticism of the ruling. A strong supporter of abortion rights, Ginsburg nevertheless said the court, quote, bit off more than it could chew, unquote. A more incremental decision, quote, would have been an opportunity for a dialogue with the state legislators, unquote, and a chance for states to take the lead on the issue. So when the article we read, right, when that said that following process should be used opportunistically, it was exactly right. That's why. Process is not the foundation of why we opposed Roe. We opposed Roe because it was evil. And here you have Ruth Bader Ginsburg attacking Roe from process. And now, am I thankful that Roe is gone? Of course. Of course I'm thankful. Roe has caused more deaths than any other single piece of legislation, law, opinion, decision, or whatever in the history of the world. I believe that. Well over 60 million innocent boys and girls slaughtered in the womb since Roe in America alone. And then, as we pointed out at closer to the start of the show, American precedent, the world follows American precedent. And so, yeah, that beats out basically anything else in world history, all the other genocides. But you know what? It is still worth pointing out that the people who took down Roe, they said, you know, we don't have the right to say whether or not murder should be allowed. That's a job for the people. And that is tragic. It is tragic. And, you know, you might say, well, hey, at least this, you know, at least it happened and it might have been bad, but that's okay because some good will come of it. You know, some people might say that, but that is exactly wrong. That is exactly wrong. Paul teaches in Romans 3 that we should not do evil, that good may come of it. Let's read this together here. All right, Romans chapter 3. Why not say, let us do evil, that good may come, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say. Their condemnation is just. So Paul says, you know, oh, these other people, right? They look at Christians and they say, wow, those Christians do evil things, so good may come of it. That's really bad that those Christians are doing those evil things. And then Paul, what does he say about their condemnation, right? He looks at these unbelievers. And does Paul say, you know, oh, they're just dumb non-Christians. They're totally depraved. They don't know anything about morality. Does he say anything like that? No, of course not. He says their condemnation is just. And so when we as Christians, if we condemn the justices on the Supreme Court for doing evil, that good may come of it, our condemnation is just. So as I said, you know, right, leave it to me to find the dark cloud in every silver lining. But there is a silver lining, there is, and I'm not only going to be exclusively doom and gloom today, doing evil, right, that good may come of it. It is immoral, but, big but here, that doesn't mean that there won't be any good that comes out of this. You see what I'm saying? It is wrong to do evil that good may come of it, but doing evil that good may come of it doesn't mean that good will definitely not come from it. A justice, right, the justices on the Supreme Court, they did something evil, and that evil thing hurt evil people. And that hurt, we can take advantage of that hurt. And so the good that comes from this, I believe millions of lives will be saved. And depending on how we play our cards as pro-lifers, millions more could be saved. Millions more could be saved. And so I want to stress this, and I cannot emphasize this enough. The fight is not over. Keep going and keep fighting. And to all the pro-lifers who have devoted your lives to this cause, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. The children in heaven who have been murdered, they thank you for your ongoing work. You are doing the will of the Lord. Thank you. And then what I'm saying now, it's hard to say because you've done so much, but keep fighting. Thank you and keep fighting. Now is not the time to be done. Now is not the time to say, you know, oh, Roe is gone. We can rest and go home. No, we have our proverbial boot on their neck. Now is not the time to giving up. Ending abortion would be the knife in the heart of liberalism. And Roe being gone, in whatever questionable manner it was removed, with it gone, it has taken with it the breastplate of the left, and it has exposed their heart. And to the pro-lifers, keep fighting and drive that knife directly into the heart. Good can come from this, but the job is not finished. We are closer. We are closer. And I always went back and forth on this, wondering if we'd see the abolition of abortion in my lifetime. Usually I'm usually rather pessimistic. But hey, right now, I'm feeling optimistic. Maybe if we work hard, I'll see before my death, or shortly thereafter, the abolition of abortion. And so to the older pro-life generation, keep fighting, keep up your work. Galatians 6:9 says, and let us not grow weary while doing good, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart. Now is not the time to lose heart. So to the older generation of pro-lifers, thank you and keep fighting. Go out fighting as you pass the torch to my generation. And being on the Lord's side, you know, who knows? We might just end abortion. We might just do it. So I'm going to keep fighting, and I'm going to ask that you keep fighting as well. Now, how can this help us, right? You know, Roe is gone, but practically, you know, I always want to know the practical. Practically, how can the fall of Roe help us? Well, a few things. Number one, and Nicole McBurney pointed this out to me. If you've been listening to Theology Thursday recently, you'll know the name Nicole McBurney. But the abortion battle, It's been stuck for a really long time in terms of legality, right? Not much has changed, right? Like, you get a regulation or two here or there, and then you get the left and they enact this or that or what the other policy, and that will, you know, undo our regulations, or it will further protect abortion. And really, at the end of the day, the same people are aborting the same children, and not all that much gets changed. But now with Roe, now that that's been kicked to the curb and it's a states' rights issue, and as we just discussed, it's a states' rights issue. No, it's not a states' rights issue. It's a abortion is murder always in any state. But now that it's being considered a states' rights issue, we are going to see a lot of change, and it got somewhat unstuck, so to speak. And we took a step in a new direction, not necessarily a better direction, not necessarily a worse direction, just a new direction. And, you know, a lot of people they've been saying, you know, oh, abortion has been abolished in XYZ states. And I'm always a little skeptical of that right after the fall of Roe, right? I heard there was an abortion regulation in, what was it? Was it Alabama? A few months back, people said, abortion has been abolished in Alabama. And then after Roe fell, the same people shout out again, abortion has been abolished in Alabama. And I was like, wait, what? Again? It reminds me a little bit of that joke. How's that joke go? Yeah, I'm really good at quitting cigarettes. I'm really good at quitting them. I've quit cigarettes 5 times this week alone. And so I've yet to look at all the individual states, but I see pro-lifers say, you know, oh, this has been abolished in XYZ states. And I'm a little skeptical of the pro-life feel-good news. But regardless of if they're right in those states or not, a lot has opened up to change. And so that is exciting, and our work can be more impactful with that. Two, our pro-life abolition laws now no longer need to include the little clause that says, you know, hey, everyone, we're going to ignore the federal government. And that's what all the abolitionist laws, they all said that. Remember, on the show a few months back, we were advocating HB 1079, not to be confused with HB 1279, but HB 1079, written by Bradley Pierce, that explicitly it had to state Colorado chooses to ignore Roe v. Wade and ignore the federal government. And it's like, yeah, you know, maybe that's not the greatest selling point. I mean, it was awesome. It was awesome to say that. But in terms of changing minds, it can be tough. And then three, biblically, the law is the great teacher. I remember someone very close, near and dear to me, who was alive when Roe was passed back in 1973, said, you know, I didn't know abortion was wrong. You know, I just saw that it was made legal, and I didn't think about it. I didn't know any better. I thought abortion was fine because it was made legal. And then that person talked to Bob Enyart and got straightened out right away and became a lifelong pro-life advocate. So that is cool. But that story really illustrates the idea that the law is the great teacher. And when the great teacher says, oh, hey, you know, abortion is fine, that makes our job as pro-lifers harder. And so Roe being overturned, it won't make those, you know, the hardened leftist loonies, it's not going to make them flip on a dime. But, you know, those, you know, so-so go along to get along types who they don't really care all that much one way or the other, they will now be a lot easier to reach. And when, you know, you don't have to argue against the government, it makes those people easier to reach. And, hey, you might convince some of them, you might convince an entire friend group or two that abortion is murder. And they might be friends, that friend group that you convince, they might be friends with one of those hardened loony leftists. And that leftist might just, you know, feel the social pressure from her own friends to not talk about it and not advocate abortion, at least when she's around them. And then, hey, 10 years go by, and what do you know? You know, maybe she'll be pro-life. But so a lot of good can come from this if we keep fighting, if we do not grow weary, if we do not lose heart. That's a lot of ifs there. We have to make We have to put our money where our mouths are. And we can save millions of lives. I do believe that. And the generally pessimistic Dominic Enyart is saying, hey, give it 70 years, and if we can just hold on, if we can just hold on, this country might just see a revival. No promises. I wanna put my money on that. But how about just a little positive thinking just for once? What a great way to wrap up Pride Month, right? What a great way to wrap up Pride Month with the fall of Roe. All right, hey, that is going to do it for me here today. I am Dominic Enyart, host of The Dominic Enyart Show, reminding you, yes, you, to do right and risk the consequences. Hey, this is Dominic Enyart. Thank you for listening to today's program. If you enjoyed the show, consider going to kgov.com and making a donation or purchasing a product. The best way to help us stay on air is to make a monthly donation, or you could sponsor a show, one show a month. That would go such a long way to helping us stay on air. Or you could sign up for our monthly mailings. My favorite personally is the Bob Enyart Monthly Bible Studies that you could only get the exclusives when you sign up for the Bob Enyart Monthly Bible Studies. My second favorite monthly mailing to receive is the Bob Enyart Live Televised Classics. Those are so much fun. You get a shipment every month. They are hilarious, educational, and they help keep us on air here at kgov.com. Or you could share this show with a friend. That would go such a long way to helping us stay on air. Hey, may God bless you guys.